Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back. It's Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. A couple of weeks ago, we had a conversation about great novels for the summer, those perfect beach book reads that transport you as far as a fiction writer's imagination can go. But truth is, of course, stranger and often more wild and whimsical than fiction. So even though we're kind of in the home stretch for summer, let's talk about some great nonfiction books you might want to pick up before the end of the season. And joining us now to help us with the nonfiction summer read list is Shuchi Saraswat and Isan Kim. Shuchi is a book buyer at the Brookline Booksmith. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
And Isan is a creative writing instructor and youth programs fellow at Grub Street in Boston. Isan, welcome. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
And sorry, but I'm stumbling all over the place. You can tell it's Friday when my ability to actually speak, a key part of my job, starts falling away. Listeners, by the way, send me a tweet right now at Radio Boston if you're listening and you've got a favorite nonfiction book that you've been reading this summer. Tweet us the name of the book and the author and why you love it. Again, send the tweet to at Radio Boston. Would love to hear from you. Okay, so before we get into Shuchi and Isan, into your lists, into some of your suggestions, just tell me, like, what do you think makes for a great summer nonfiction read? Shuchi?
For me, I love being outside in the summer. And so a lot of the books that I'm drawn to are travel narratives, nature books, and books often that I can pick up and put down that kind of, you know, call me back to them. So I'll often read essay collections this time of year or, you know, books that are kind of looking into one really specific topic in depth that I can just kind of read a chapter and come back to it later.
Yeah, no, that sounds good because, I mean, the summer, unless you've got, you know, 2 weeks and you're on vacation, you can just sit down and read an entire, you know, weighty tome. I like the idea of kind of dipping in and out as time allows. Isan, what about you?
I'm a little bit of the opposite. I actually, when I define a beach read, it's something that maybe day to day during the year, not on vacation, I didn't have time to dive into completely. I love reading books cover to cover, you know, maybe in 6 hour sprints and things like that, but I rarely get that time. And so I usually pick these books that I want to be completely immersed in. I just want to be in that world. And I want to wrap it around me and not put it down and take it with me everywhere when I'm eating and, you know, on the beach everywhere. And those are usually the types of books that I pick.
So I'm going to presume that this distinction doesn't exist for either of you because you are so constantly immersed in the world of books. But why do you think that so many people, when they think about summer reads, quote unquote summer reads or beach books, they first think of, you know, the crime fiction or the novel. And they don't think of all the great nonfiction that's out there.
That's a really good question. I think nonfiction sometimes gets a bad rap because of school. And I think people forget that there's so much out there, even, you know, even the word essay. You know, I tell folks in a personal essay class and they kind of cringe and they don't even know that they're doing it because they only see essays as academic endeavors.
Yeah.
But obviously we know that essays are just completely broad, open things. And you mentioned, Shuchi, the essay collections coming out, many of which are phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And I think, although, once they're turned on to one really good nonfiction book, which I like to do, my husband jokes with me about that, I always have one ready. Once they're turned on to it and they see the open world, at the end of a class that I teach at Grub Street, they often say, wow, I had no idea that there was this much out there.
Yeah.
And so I think it's just being turned on to it.
Yeah, and I think sometimes fiction is an escape, you know, and so people want to be taken to a different world and they don't realize that there are so many ways to escape within nonfiction, you know. One of the books I have in here is this guy who's obsessed with bugs, and it's so, and he's in Sweden, and he's just this entomologist who's talking about the world of bugs, and that is a whole other kind of world within our world that you can escape to. So it doesn't always have to be topical, related to news. It doesn't have to be history. There are lots of different ways to kind of escape within nonfiction.
Tell us, okay, so I was going to actually ask you, tell us the name of this book about the scientist.
Yeah, that one is The Fly Trap.
The Fly Trap,
yeah,
that was it.
Yeah, by Frederick Schoberg. Yeah, that is really, it's a very slim book. It's very whimsical. And it's a memoir kind of wrapped in about this obsession with bugs.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we've actually got some suggestions right here from our listeners coming in over Twitter. Mem Somerville tweets, I loved Lab Girl by Hope Jaron. I think that falls in the memoir category, does it? I don't remember.
I believe so.
Yeah. And Amy Holden Jones sent us a tweet about Ghetto Side. And Peter Butler is rereading A Walk in the Woods by Bill Bryson.
A great read to
prepare for a fall hike. So listeners, send us your tweets at Radio Boston about your favorite summer nonfiction reads. We just got three of them from listeners. Tell us the name of the book, the author, if you could, and why you love it. Now, both of you talked about getting outdoors through nonfiction, exploring some of the outdoors and nature. And Shuchi, you had mentioned The Fly Trap. Isan, you've got another sort of nature-based one on your list.
I do. This one's a favorite of mine. It's The Soul of an Octopus by Cy Montgomery. And, you know, if you think of our dog-loving culture here in Boston, you would never think that an octopus would be this cuddly creature with such full personalities. And there's a second reason why I really love this piece is that it sneaks in two stories. So it gives you a behind the scenes of the New England Aquarium, which is a place that I love and I often write there. But it also is a friendship story, not just between animal and human, but among the humans who care for these animals. And you gain a really whole new level of respect for the staff around the New England Aquarium and how deeply they get engaged with these creatures.
Right. I think Cy Montgomery is such a master at doing that. She folds in these two stories, which help you fall in love with nature and the people who are working to preserve it as well.
I mean, Absolutely.
We talked to her about a separate book about great white sharks, her new book, and it was just fantastic. She did exactly the same thing, especially for a species which is so maligned by humanity, usually. So, Suchi, you've got another one about birds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's H's for Hawk by Helen MacDonald. Yeah, I actually read this book last year while camping, and it was the perfect book to read. Helen MacDonald's an incredible writer just at the sentence level. And it's also kind of a really bizarre thing that she decides to do. You know, she's dealing with the death of her father. She's in this moment of very intense grief. So she decides to take on a ghost hawk and train it. And so it's this intense relationship that she has with this very wild, untrainable bird. And at the same time, she's also reading the memoirs of a writer who has been dealing with the same, tried to train a ghost hawk many years ago and failed. And so she's kind of merging his world with hers and just, you know, the way she talks about the bird and the bird's eyes. I mean, it's really a unique book.
Yeah.
And it is actually very absorbing, oddly enough.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I feel like, you know, linking back to what you guys were talking about earlier, these are several great examples about how Not that fiction doesn't do this well, but I think nonfiction writing, when it talks about, you know, these kinds of relationships that people have with nature, they really excel through whether the memoir format or, you know, what Cy Montgomery does. It's one of those things where I think nonfiction really sort of does it because they're talking about real relationships and there's no need to apply any imagination or fictionalized imagination. So
absolutely. I mean, when creative nonfiction writers come into my class, they're awed by the idea that in creative nonfiction, we're striving to understand something. And it often comes through on the page with these nonfiction pieces, this striving to understand whether it's nature, ourselves, the world in which we live. And that's usually a common thing.
Yeah. Oh, look, we've got more tweets coming in. See, we've got a very literate audience here. So Kristen Caffrey, and Kristen, I hope I said your last name right. She'd send us a tweet, says she likes The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat by, of course, the great Oliver Sacks.
Oh, yeah.
Amy Holden Jones loves The Apprentice by Jacques Pepin. It's an autobiography of a brilliant life spanning food revolutions and two centuries and continents. Great, so some food writing there. Look, we got a tweet from Alex Ashlock. Maybe I shouldn't be reading this because he's actually a WBUR employee. He works at Here and Now. But Alex says, my favorite so far is Frank Shorter's My Marathon, an Olympic champion's memoir. That will surprise you. Got a couple others. Kevin Brunil says, Pagan Kennedy's Inventology. Great read about invention and creativity. And Oh, Amy Holden Jones sends us another one. The Tomcat, great beach read, and she wrote it. Okay. Good plug there, Amy. Send us your tweet at Radio Boston for your favorite summer nonfiction reads. That's what we're talking about with Shushi Saraswat. She's the book buyer at Brookline Booksmith, and Isan Kim, youth programs fellow and creative writing instructor at Grub Street in Boston. Now, I don't want to leave the nature theme just yet, because you guys do have some great suggestions on your summer nonfiction list about books that talk about different ways to explore our world. Isan, you've got one called Lonely City.
Oh, so Lonely City does a beautiful job. Olivia Lang does a beautiful job of talking about how loneliness is just a part of the human condition. And sometimes it's not something to be avoided. It's something to be embraced. And she talks about it through the filter of art, Andy Warhol and other amazing artists and filmmakers, and how they channeled loneliness, particularly loneliness within very large cities, and used it as inspiration and the fuel behind their art. And so it was really, really well done. I think a book just about loneliness would have been a little bit maybe unbearable for some, but it's so artfully done that I think she does a fabulous job.
Yeah, I mean, there's the idea of loneliness and loneliness or solitude or the inspiration, different kinds of inspiration that either of those experiences can provide. Shuji, I love this one. It's on your list. A Field Guide to Getting Lost.
Yes, this is one of my all-time favorites. So this is by Rebecca Solnit, who a lot of people know now because of her book Men Explain Things to Me. But this is one of her first or one of her earlier books, I should say. She's written quite a few books. And she's just one of those people who can write about so many different subjects. In this particular book, she takes the idea of getting lost and explores it through nature, explorers, film, art. And they're all these kind of, you know, stories that she touches upon. In between them, she's got this these essays called The Blue of Distance. And they all take the idea of longing. And kind of, you know, an example of it is mountains that are set off in the distance. They're always blue. And the more you walk towards them, they kind of continue to stay blue. They will always kind of be blue, and you can never really reach it. And so this is, you know, these explorers are all trying to reach something that they can never quite grasp. And so she just kind of plays around with that very, you know, nebulous idea and really kind of attaches these great stories to it. She's exceptional.
Well, we've got a couple more suggestions coming in. Elaine Almquist sent us a tweet saying, I still love Brenda Maddox's biography, Rosalind Franklin, The Dark Lady of DNA. Nancy Gold has sent us a tweet saying, anything by Mary Roach. Hilarious and informative. Again, send us a tweet at Radio Boston about your favorite summer nonfiction reads. Let's shift gears here entirely, because we've been spending some time talking about nature and exploration. Let's talk about matters of the heart, because there's some really good nonfiction out there about this. And I want to play some tape to introduce one of your suggestions here. This is Aziz Ansari. We've got a clip of him talking about the agony of modern dating at one of his major stand-up gigs live at Madison Square Garden.
You send the first text, you're all confidence. Forget about it. It's done. 20 minutes later, no response. Okay, well, I'm sure she's just busy with a couple of things, and any minute now, 3 hours later, I put too many exclamation points in my text! What was I thinking? I should have said, hey, with 2 Ys, not 3 Ys, I'm so stupid!
That's Aziz Ansari, and Shuchi, his book, Modern Romance, made your list.
Yeah, you know, this book is so funny, because He's a comedian, and he's taking this idea of romance. But he paired up with a sociologist for this book. So there are a lot of studies through this where they're kind of talking to couples, and they're including statistics. There's graphs. He's got a bunch of photos of people's online dating profiles, and kind of examines how these photos takes the patterns of these photos and kind of figures out what the ideal photo would be for a dating profile. So it's, you know, it's funny, but there is research in there too. So you're actually kind of learning something while reading this this really kind of quirky book.
Yeah, it sounds good. And to have his voice and his style be the thing that carries you through it, I think is one of the things that makes it such a great read. Now, Isan, you've got a different kind of love nonfiction here, Labor of Love, The Invention of Dating by Moira Weigel.
Indeed. it's funny because Sushi just talked about learning a little something as you read a book, and this really happens. You get the history of dating and what dating was like many, many years ago, and all the way to the present with internet and online dating and how people date today. And what's interesting about this book is that it gets you to reconsider this circus that dating is, and it reminds you to say that who is it serving? In many ways, it just seems to train women to want to be wanted. But really, what do you want out of love beyond that? And I love a lot of nonfiction that just gets us to look at things we accept and take for granted and step back and go, what are we really doing here? And I think this book does that really, really well.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Well, we've got a couple minutes to go. And gosh, your lists are so good. We're not even going to get to half of them. And I should let people know that we've got the complete list at our website, radioboston.org. And you should definitely take time to check it out. You can pick any one of these books and you'd have a delightful read for the rest of the summer. But very briefly, can we just touch upon your memoir picks? Because Shuji, you've got I'm Just a Person from Tig Notaro.
Yeah. So Tig Notaro is a stand-up comedian. And in 2012, she was, you know, kind of going through this really brutal year. She just got cancer. She's going through a breakup, the death of her mother. And she kind of just goes up on stage and says, you know, I'm going to talk about this horrible time I'm having. She was very honest.
It's a routine that made her career.
Yeah, it did. And so this is the memoir of that year. And I think there's something, you know, she's blunt, but she's funny, and knowing now she's married and she's in remission, it kind of has a happy ending. I think there's something kind of nice knowing that there's hope at the end of what her really bad year. I think it's also got some nice illustrations, and it's a really interesting book.
And Ihsahn, we just got a couple seconds. Your pick for a memoir
is Pour Your Soul by Mira Pitassin, and it really shows that while we all walk grief alone, when we come out the other side, we find that the people who love us were never that far away.
Yeah. Well, look, we've got some more suggestions coming in. All our readers listening. Benita Catastrophe is talking about reading Between the World and Me, of course, by Ta-Nehisi Coates. Liz T. says Just Mercy by Brian Stevenson. Let's see. Gerard Marquez. I'm sorry if I said your name wrong, Gerard. Favorite nonfiction is The Witches, Salem, 1692 by Stacey Schiff. So just the start of some of the suggestions from our listeners. Keep them coming at Radio Boston. And if you want to see Shuji's and Ihsahn's list, go to radioboston.org, and we've got those lists there. Shuji Saraswat, book buyer at Brookline Booksmith, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Meghna.
And Ihsahn Kim, youth programs fellow and creative writing instructor at Grub Street in Boston, thank you as well.
Thank you.
I don't even know where I'm going to start now with all these books to read in the next couple of weeks, but I will definitely try to pick up one for this weekend, because it is Friday afternoon. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Have a great and safe weekend, and join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.